Sounds True presents Mantra, Sacred Words of Power, Session 3, Karma and Mantras.
I am often asked if one needs to change religion to use Sanskrit mantras. The answer is an emphatic no. In my experience, I've lived with people of varying faiths, including Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, Christianity, and Hinduism. All of them used Sanskrit mantra and found no conflict with their faith, because Sanskrit mantra is not about religion so much as it is about spiritual energy that transcends religion and is common to the human condition. The various anthropomorphized principles that represent the Hindu pantheon, say, have really evolved over time as aids to learning and working with the energy-based language. They put visual and conceptual components with the energy base. They also have art and music, literature, painting, and sculpture to also assist in producing an understanding of this essentially energy-based phenomenon. And it is all of these appurtenances that have come to be known as Hinduism. Technically speaking, there is no single religion that is Hinduism, but it is a collection of a number of philosophies and approaches that have come under one term. So the short answer is no. There are certainly images that we borrow from what has evolved to be Hinduism over thousands of years, but one certainly need not change their tradition to work with these energy-based sounds. The other important point to know is that mantras will work whether you believe in them or not. This is not a function of belief. I tell people it's similar to going up to the top of a building and saying, "I will not be harmed, I will not be harmed," and jumping off the building. The law of gravity is going to inexorably come into play, and something will happen. And when working with Sanskrit mantra, we are working with spiritual laws that come into play whether or not we believe in them. They perform their energy-based function, and they will have an effect regardless of whether we look at Durga or Saraswati or Ganesha. There will be an effect because they are energy-based. So with that in mind, there are 7 things I'd like you to remember about mantras, and the first of which is that they are energy-based rather than meaning-based. Pronouncing a mantra creates a particular physical vibration in the form of sound. This sound produces an actual effect in the physical body and in a subtle body. And the effects of the energy come to be recognized within the body as the meaning, but they have nothing to do with meaning as we understand them. In the same context, number 2, mantras have only an approximate language-based translation. Here's what I mean. If we tell a young child not to touch a hot stove, we're trying to explain to the child that it's hot and the child may become burned. However, the child has no experience to support what we're trying to tell them. Only if the child actually touches the stove, becomes burned, then they'll know what hot means, because it has an energy context associated with it. And they now understand hot in the context of burn and in the context of stove. It's the same with mantras. The only true definition is the experience which a mantra ultimately creates in the individual who chants it, who uses it. The original seer of the mantra understood its effect in a specific way. And remarkably, down through the thousands and thousands of years, whether it was said then or said now, the outcomes are remarkably similar because the energy is the same. That's not to say that the Sanskrit language is a meaningless language in terms of communication. It certainly is not. But it is stylized because it is dependent first upon energy and second upon meaning, as opposed to English, which is first upon meaning and second upon energy. The third thing is that mantras are also chakra-based sounds. Now, we talked about chakras as those energy centers located along the spine. Each of them are like flowers, those chakras, and the flowers have different numbers of petals. And if you add up all of the petals on chakras 1 through 6, there's a total of 50 of them. And interestingly enough, there are exactly 50 letters in the Sanskrit alphabet. And according to the teachers in India, they will tell you that the developed clairvoyant adept can actually see the petals on the chakras. And long ago, they were recorded and written down. And that's how we have the record today of which Sanskrit letters are in which petals of which chakras. So that as you chant the Sanskrit language, you are resonating the petals of those chakras in a scientific, systematized way that composes the words of the mantras. In this way, mantra affects our physical body because of the energy in our subtle body, and therefore it affects our spiritual consciousness as the energy continues to grow through our chanting of the mantra. 4, mantras combined with your attention produces a more powerful outcome. There's a saying in spiritual circles you may have heard, attention is energy. Intention qualifies attention. It's as if you have a white light bulb, which is raw light energy. You put a red gel in front of it, you put a green gel in front of it, you're going to change the quality of the light, but the light is still the same. Similarly, if you change the intention, you're going to affect subtle shades of the mantra. In any case, you're going to make it more powerful because you're taking the sound vibration itself and combining it with the mental quality of your intention. And this strengthens and directs the quality of the energy and makes it even more powerful. In a sense, you've combined mind and sound into a very powerful tool. 5, mantra energizes prana. There is a form of life energy in the body called prana. People who do hands-on healing work with the prana. Sometimes they can help clear pranic blockages in another person, and sometimes they can transfer their own prana. In fact, the sciences of acupuncture and acupressure work on the idea of the circulation of prana within the subtle body. Mantra energizes prana. It brings ambient energy from the near surround into the prana. By pronouncing a particular mantra while visualizing an internal organ, you can concentrate prana in that organ and start to perform healing on yourself. You can increase the circulation of life energy in your body by chanting your mantra and seeing the energy of your body brightly and uniformly distributed throughout your body. In this case, your mental intention combined with the sound can work in a very specific way. 6, mantras are energy which can be likened to fire. You know, there's an old saying that you can take fire and you can use it to cook your lunch, or you can burn down the forest. It's the same fire. Fire is fire. Something is similarly true with mantras. Mantras evoke powerful energies that should be treated with respect. So if you're using your mantra with intensity and discipline and focus, and you find that maybe your behavior is not quite what you want it to be, you're a little irritable, you're a little on edge, take a break. Let your fire cool down a little bit, and then go back and pick it up again when things are manageable. You're working with tangible energy, respect it, and respect its activity within you. 7, mantras eventually quiet the mind. Over a period of time, as we talked about in an earlier session, the subconscious waves of thought that exist throughout the body become absorbed and quieted by the power of the mantra so that you become peaceful over time. Now, that's one part of the phenomenon. Sometimes, however, while we're digging up highly crystallized patterns, It can be disconcerting. Let me give you an example. Suppose you have a swimming pool, and on the bottom of this swimming pool, there's accumulated a couple of inches of muck that have gathered over several years, and you want to clean the muck out of that pool. So you lower a vacuum hose into the muck and you turn on the switch. What happens? The first thing, all the muck swirls up, even as some is pulled into the hose. So in looking at it from the outside, it looks as if the pool is actually getting dirtier. In fact, it's not true. You've stirred up the muck even while you're cleaning it. Sometimes you'll find as you're chanting mantra that your state of clarity will become temporarily clouded, and you might find that your energy, rather than being peaceful and serene, becomes a little agitated. Please know that you are in fact cleaning out stuff, and as we talked about earlier, it's just working its way out. So summarizing the seven things I'd like you to remember about mantras. First, they are energy-based sounds. Second, they have only an approximate language-based translation, even if it is part of a language that is used to communicate. Three, they are chakra-based sounds. Four, when you combine mantra with mental intention, you increase their effect. Five, mantra can energize your prana. Six, mantras are energy like fire, so respect them. And seven, mantras eventually quiet the mind, even if you should disrupt little crystallized patterns for a while. Eventually, they will clean your entire subconscious, and you will become a repository of peace. Words become popular and circulate sometimes as slang. We have some Sanskrit words that fit in that category. Guru, mantra, karma. It's that last word I'd like to talk a bit about. What is karma anyway? Well, understanding karma will help us better understand the activity of Sanskrit mantra, what it's working on and how it works. Simply stated, karma is the law of cause and effect. As the doctrine states, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. But the nature of karma says, we may have sown in a previous lifetime and be reaping in this lifetime, because karma rests upon the idea of reincarnation, or past lives in which karma has been created. In a classical sense, karma is all of the thoughts and the words and the deeds we have ever created since we took first birth upon this earth, however many lifetimes ago that may be. And correspondingly, you can have good karma just as easily as you can have bad karma. Now, most of us are trying to work out the stuff that's not too good. But another saying from the East is, a gold chain will bind you just as firmly as an iron one. Ultimately, we must be free of both kinds of karma, both good and bad, if we are to achieve that state called mukti, or liberation, that we talked about earlier. We don't want anything that will bind us here. We want to graduate so we can go on to other things. Most of us, however, are working trying to eliminate karma that we've created in other lives, which may not be what we wish. If we, for instance, don't have the amount of income or job that we might want, then we have karma that is associated with that. If you are not getting the kind of relationship you want, then our karma from past life is influencing that as well. And mantras can help us with both of these and other things. The law of karma also includes the idea of grace. Our karma can be forgiven by some form of divine authority. And this can take several forms. In the New Testament, we read where Jesus was to have taken on the collective sins of humanity, and most of us are familiar with that idea from that source. But it's not just limited to the great ones around whom world religions have formed. The great sage Paramahamsa Yogananda once visited a place in India where elephantiasis was widespread. And soon he began to exhibit all the symptoms of elephantiasis. And someone asked him, they said, well, Master Yogananda, you have all of these things. Have you contracted the disease? He said, no, I'm just doing my part. And he dropped it at that. And those who understood knew that he was taking on part of that disease on himself to relieve the general suffering. He took on as much as he could handle as his way of serving those in the community where he was living. I once had a personal example of a spiritual teacher I complained to about a problem that I had. And he looked at me and he said, "Okay, let me have it." And I felt something lift within, and he seemed to sag a little. And then he seemed to shrug his shoulders, and he said out loud, "It's just the body. I am not this body anyway." And from that moment on, that which had been bothering me no longer bothered me. And so here we have an example, not of great religious figures that we know from religious literature, but figures much less famous. Yogananda is very famous. The individual that I talked to was very little known, but he had the power to take other people's karma and work it off in a spirit of service. Like many of you, many years ago, I came across the phenomenon of a Catholic priest known as Padre Pio and the phenomenon of the stigmata. For those of you who may not have run into this, the stigmata is where an individual will begin to demonstrate the wounds of Christ on their person. Padre Pio is an example of that, where he had the nail wounds in his hand and he used to bleed. He was examined by doctors and scientists for years, and they could never find anything that would suggest that it was a fraud. It was obviously happening to him, but no one knew how it was happening to him. There have also been nuns who have had the stigmata. And one theory that has been offered is that these people, out of their devotion to Christ, had undertaken a tiny piece of his suffering, and that their devotion had qualified them to take that piece. And some have even suggested that there were so many throughout history that have done that, that Christ actually experienced very little pain when he was actually on the cross, because so many people had decided that they wanted to share in his passion. To understand some of the methods related to Sanskrit mantra and the relief of karma, we should understand that there are four divisions of karma that are described in the Vedas. They have Sanskrit names. One is called Sanchita karma. That just means all the past accumulated actions from all of our lifetimes. Number two is called Prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karma is that portion of our total karma that we have decided to give ourselves an opportunity to work off in this particular individual lifetime. And it is that kind of karma that we are most concerned with. What did we come in with? What kinds of karma do we have to work with? And what can we do about it? The third kind is called agami karma, and that is the result from actions in this lifetime that will affect future lifetimes. Now we begin to understand the Buddhist idea of right livelihood and the Ten Commandments, or the Golden Rule. Because if we follow those prescriptions from those religions, we are producing good karma for our next life and not producing more bad karma. So these dictums then become really instructions in enlightened self-interest, so that we can improve the fruits of future lives. There's one fourth kind that I should talk about, which is Kriyamana karma. That's instant karma. You hit somebody, chances are they're going to hit you back. They call that Kriyamana karma. Now, there's another aspect that we need to consider, which is storing of karma. We have a physical body. You know, all of us have different kinds of physical bodies. Some have great athletic talent. Some have great musical skill. We have mathematical geniuses. We have people that have good luck playing the ponies. All of this has to do with the kinds of energy, both physical and mental, that we bring in with us when we come into embodiment. Since we come in with all these various karmic predispositions in our physical organs, in our emotional life, in our mental life, then how do these individual bits of karma come into play? The answer is they are triggered. We meet a person in a certain set of circumstances, which triggers some reactive pattern, triggers some form of action, and immediately our karma comes into play. How we work and handle these things determines how much of the karma we work off and how much of it we may create anew and have to work off at some future time. So on the one hand, while the law of karma is very simple, as you sow, so shall you reap. What goes around comes around. The law of cause and effect. Simple statement, complex outworking. Let's say, for instance, that someone is fired from a job or contracts a serious illness, or maybe loses a lover. Each person will react differently. While one person may become depressed or discouraged, another one facing these circumstances decides that they will never give up. They become even more determined. So how we handle life circumstances determines how we handle our own karma, both present and future. So now that we know that we have karma, we have different kinds of karma, that we store karma, how is it we work it off? What can we do to work it off? Well, the way I'm familiar with is Sanskrit mantra. By working with mantras, you begin to dig up karma and neutralize it from within, depending upon the formula. There are some Sanskrit mantras that work on specific conditions. For instance, the mantra Om Shri Mahalakshmiyeh Namaha, a mantra to bring in abundance. Well, this is a fairly specific application of mantra. There are other classes of mantra that are for spiritual development, spiritual growth, and will begin to move the entire organism forward without addressing any specific problem. There are mantras in Buddhism and mantras in Hinduism that do that. Some of them we'll talk about later, but to give you an example, the Buddhist mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Is a mantra that advances one spiritually. It does not address an individual problem or difficulty. It is a spiritual mantra that takes the entire organism and moves it forward. Well, that's fine, and we should all say mantras that do that. But the truth is, we're also concerned with life on this plane, in the body, and the difficulties it presents. The kind of work we do spiritually can determine how our karma works. American Swami Kriyananda, known more recently as Donald Walters, made a beautiful statement. He said, it can be in your karma that you're supposed to fall down a flight of stairs and break your leg at a certain point. But through use of spiritual discipline, you can prepare yourself so that when that moment comes, all you do is stub your toe. This is a beautiful example of how spiritual work can reduce and lessen even the most difficult kinds of karma. One of the ways in which karma works powerfully for all of us is in the position of the planets. The science of astrology is thousands of years old, and there is an Eastern variety and a Western variety. And in my experience, both of them appear to work and have a scientific validity and a basis. But only the Eastern approach to astrology has specific mantras for each of the planets, so that if you're having problem with a vibration from one planet or another that's manifesting in difficulties in your daily life, you can soften that, and in some cases, eliminate it altogether. So there are mantras for each of the planets and two nodes of the moon called Dragon's Head and Dragon's Tail that astrologers know well. Working with these mantras by chanting them works directly upon the organ inside where the karma relating to that planet is stored. It begins to dig out that which may be holding you back and releasing it so that any negative effects from that planetary influence simply evaporates. So if you're seriously concerned about reducing your karma that is related to the position of the planets, I would highly recommend that you find a competent astrologer, either of the Eastern or the Western variety, and have your horoscope cast. Once you have that in your hand, the astrologer will tell you what are the difficult alignments in your chart. And those alignments are governed by planets and the way they relate to one another. Once you know what the planets are, you can chant mantras relating specifically to those planets. Now let me go down the mantras for the seven planets and the two karmic nodes of the moon. And you'll be able to refer to this once you get your astrological horoscope cast. If, for instance, an astrologer tells you that you have a problem with the way the sun relates to some of the planets that may be causing you difficulties, then I would suggest that you chant a sun mantra that will alleviate that problem. And the mantra for the sun in Sanskrit, the short form, is Om Suryaya Namaha, Om Suryaya Namaha, Om Suryaya Namaha. Sometimes a chart may reveal that there is a problem with the moon placement, and the moon generally accounts for a way a personality may present itself to the world. So if you want to work with that, Om Chandraya Namaha is a powerful mantra for the moon. Om Chandraya Namaha, Om Chandraya Namaha. For some people, the planet Mars can cause problems related to aggression or problems related to even injury because of its nature. So there is a mantra that will soften that as well. This mantra is a little bit longer and a little bit more complicated, but I think you can get it. Om Angarakaya Namaha. Om Angarakaya Namaha. Om Angarakaya Namaha. Now remember, all of these mantras are included in the workbook that comes with this course. So you can always refer to that, even as you're listening to this. Mercury, communications, the messenger, has a mantra that is somewhat familiar because it's Buddha, not the Buddha, but Buddha. Om Buddhaya Namaha. Om Buddhaya Namaha. Om Buddhaya Namaha. Jupiter, the planet of the great benefactor, if it's held in a position where it's not able to give you all of the things that you may need or want, then chant this mantra to bring forth its pleasant and generous qualities. Om Gurave Namaha. Om Gurave Namaha. Om Gurave Namaha. Venus, we know it as the planet of love. In the Eastern school, it is also the planet of scriptural knowledge, for those who want to understand the inner meaning of the scriptures. And the mantra for it is, Om Shukraya Namaha. Om Shukraya Namaha. Om Shukraya Namaha. Saturn is the planet of lessons. Oh boy, I've heard so many stories of people that are in what astrologers call their Saturn cycle, and their life turns upside down. Well, there's a mantra that I have used in my own Saturn cycle that helped me greatly. I'm going to give you two forms of the mantra. One to use if you're before the age of 28, and another one if you are after the age of 28. Because at the age of 28, your Saturn return begins. That is to say, that Saturn returns to the point it was when you were born in its orbit. And astrologers will tell you that another 28-year learning cycle begins. So, if you're before the age of 28, the beginning of your Saturn return, the mantra is, Om Shaneshcharaya Namaha. Om Shaneshcharaya Namaha. Om Shaneshcharaya Namaha. After the age of 28, the energy in the body shifts a little. And most people, it comes up to the solar plexus. At this point, the ending of the mantra will change from Namaha to Swaha. And because the ending changes, the word before it will also change. And the mantra becomes Om Shaneshwaraya Swaha. Om Shaneshwaraya Swaha. Om Shaneshwaraya Swaha. Now we come to the moon. There are two karmic nodes of the moon that astrologers will tell you about. They call them Dragon's Head and Dragon's Tail, the North Node and the South Node. In Sanskrit, these are called Rahu and Ketu. And here are their short mantras. Rahu. Om Rahuve Namaha. Om Rahuve Namaha. Om Rahuve Namaha. Dragon's Head. And now, Dragon's Tail, Ketu. Om Ketuve Namaha. Om Ketuve Namaha. Om Ketuve Namaha. So these are mantras for the planets that you can use if you know what difficulties may exist in your astrological natal chart. But what if you don't know? Well, there's a series of stanzas called the Navagraha Pida. And these are stanzas designed to soften your planetary karma. And I will chant them for you as a meditation for easing your planetary karma, as they were intended to do and have done for these many thousands of years.
Navagraha Pida Grahanamari Raditya Loka Rakshaha Karakaha Vishwamastana Sambhutam Thidam Hartame Ravihi Rohini Shaha Sutar Murti Sudha Gatraha Sindashanaha Vishwamastana Sambhutam Thidam Hartame Viduhu Bhumiputro Mahateja Jagatam Vayakritsada Vrsti Krudusti Hratacham Thidam Hartame Kujaha Utpata Rupi Jagatam Chandra Putro Mahadvihi Surya Priya Karu Vidyam Kidam Harutume Budaha Deva Mantri Vishalakshaha Sada Loka Hitarataha Anika Shisha Sampunaha Kidam Harutume Guruhu Daita Mantri Rusteshayam Pranasya Mahamatihi Prabhusta Agrahanamcha Kidam Harutume Bruhu Surya Putro Dirgadeho Vishalakshaha Shiva Priya Dirga Charaha Prasanatma Pidam Hartume Shani Maha Shisho Maha Bhaktro Digadumstro Maha Balaha Atuscho Urdva Keshchaha Pidam Hartume Shiti Anika Rupa Varnischa Shetra Shotra Sahasraha Utpata Rupi Jagatam Pidam Hartume Tamaha Iti Navagraha Hira Parihara Stotram Sampurnam.
May this stotra ease and reduce your planetary karma and make your path smoother, clearer, and more light on the way. A proactive way to approach your own karmic planetary difficulties, if you know what they are from your chart, is to pick one of the planetary mantras and do it in a meditation for, say, 108 times. You might sit, Om Suryaya Namaha, Om Suryaya Namaha, Om Suryaya Namaha. Or you might say, I'm going to chant this now for 5 minutes. And you can work with any of these planetary mantras at any time in those ways. So by saying these various mantras, you have a tool to work with karmic reduction. In that sense, you can take your fate in your own hands, and you can change the outcome. That which is written can be unwritten through your discipline with Sanskrit mantra. We've talked about mantras, seed mantras, planetary mantras, and how they can reduce karma. So what kind of structure can we place them in where we can use them on a regular basis? You heard me say earlier that you could chant a mantra for 108 times. The Hindu rosary is called a mala. Actually, Hindu and Buddhist rosary is called a mala. It has 108 beads. The Catholic rosary has 54 beads and would be called a half mala in Sanskrit. In any case, both of these are convenient mechanisms for counting the number of mantras that you do. and they've been used this way for thousands of years. So one approach to spiritual discipline is to say, I'm going to do this mantra for 40 days, and I'm going to do it for 108 times in the morning and 108 times at night. And so you mark your calendar and you get your rosary. Now, some people like to have a personal altar with a candle and maybe a photo or something. This is entirely optional. It's not necessary, but if it appeals to you, then by all means use it. Find a quiet place where you can perform your mantra meditation at the same place every day. You begin to build energy in the place where you do your spiritual disciplines. So you have your rosary, you have your mala, and you begin your repetition. Om Suryaya Namaha, Om Suryaya Namaha, or whatever it may be, for 40 days. The number 40 is significant in Far Eastern spiritual disciplines, and for several thousand years has been given as the length of time for a formal spiritual discipline. So that's why the number 40 is routinely prescribed by teachers from the Far East for a spiritual discipline lasting a number of days. Now, in the 40 days, you can decide, I'll do it 108 in the morning or 108 at night. Or you can approach it in another way altogether. You can decide that during that 40 days, you'll say the mantra as much as possible. You'll say it from the time you get up till the time you go to bed at night. You can decide that if you're with people or in a situation where you can't chant it out loud, you'll chant it silently. You can do it while cooking, while washing dishes, while driving the car, while mowing the lawn. You can be working with your mantra and decide that you want to approach your structured discipline that way instead. Either way will give you results. Each of us have different stations in life, different sets of responsibilities. So pick the way which resonates best with you, and then be diligent. Don't miss a day. Continue on for the entire 40 days. If it gets a little intense, say it a little less, but don't miss a day. Complete the entire 40 days of your spiritual discipline. This is a powerful technique, both for eliminating karmic conditions through the use of planetary mantras, and for bringing things into your life that you want to see manifest using mantras for some of the principles that we discussed earlier and that we'll be discussing in subsequent portions of this course. One small distinction between saying the mantra all of the time and using your rosary or mala. When you're using the rosary or mala, I recommend that you sit quietly in one place and focus your mind and use the mala as your meditation aid and as your spiritual counter. Then you can decide to either keep the mala in a safe place there, or you can wear it, either outside or inside of your clothes, where the vibrations will be ever with you. What I do not recommend is that you go through your daily activities holding your mala in one hand and mumbling as you try to mow the lawn. I don't think you'll find that that will produce the kind of result that you wish. You certainly might get some interesting looks, though. On the main, if you're going to do your mantra all the time, do it mentally or quietly without a mala. And when you use your mala, sit quietly in one place. Sometimes you may find that there's more than one planet or more than one principle that you'd like to work with at the same time. There are a couple of ways you can approach that. Say there are three planets. You can decide you'll do one in the morning, one sometime in the middle of the day, and one at the end of the day. Another way you can approach it is to decide to do one for a week, and then another one for another week, and then another one for a third week, so that you have a 21-day discipline that you've established for yourself. If you feel ambitious, you can make it a 20-20-20 and a 60-day discipline. So knowing yourself, your time requirements, you can construct a spiritual discipline that will be effective and also suit your conditions. When you practice, you will find that your mind begins to become more concentrated. You become able to think more clearly. You may also find that you have some kinds of spiritual experiences. The range of these experiences is so broad and so different for different kinds of people But here are a few things. You may begin to have what some call subtle sight. You may see auras around people. You may have vivid dreams in which you have pieces of information given to you. You may develop a keener sense of hearing and hear various frequencies or tones or even music. I recommend that you keep a spiritual diary, because some of these things will be very meaningful, and then we forget. But if you keep a spiritual diary and write even just a few lines every day, you'll be amazed years later at what you have on file. I can tell you, having practiced it myself, that I have at times kept the diary and at times not kept the diary. And going back and reviewing my diary from 15 and 20 years ago, I found wonderful things that I had been taught that I had long since forgotten. So I recommend keeping a spiritual diary most highly.